also broadcasting on the internet at www.sheffieldlive.org.uk. We have a chat room, so I hope anyone who's listening on the internet will come in on the chat room and say hello to the studio here. I've got some shouts to give out to Paul T up in Burngreave and Alan D in the same place. We have Monsieur Philippe Béchamp listening all the way from Montreal. Charlotte, a friend of mine out in Healy. I was hoping that Chris was going to turn up today. Chris and Magda listening out in Sharrow. Chris was going to come and take 100 photos of today's show. So Chris, if you can get down, that would be really good to see you in the studio. We have Anarcho Babe and Space Bunny listening all the way up in Scotland, as far as I know. Probably Sean in London from the London IMC crew. Dave at Planet Mail, Adam Ad Nauseam, and Chris Corrupt Youth as well. So hopefully lots of people are listening live on the internet. We're also recording it as well for so that you can listen to it later, listen to the show later. So that'll be up on the internet. So hopefully we'll get a lot of listeners there. And what else? So I'll just do a roundup of what we're going to try and get through tonight. We're going to go to the second part of the Nick and Helen interview. These are two activists who went to the Genoa and Evian actions. And it's a continuation of their interview last week that Paul did. It was recorded in Sheffield, outside, in the sunshine. And so if you do hear any birds squeaking in the background, then, you know, that just emphasises the al fresco nature of the interview. We've got some Sheffield squatters down here to talk about the Sheffield squatter scene. Adam and Tanya, and then Tom. We'll go to Ajaz, who is a local DJ and musician. Ajaz, also known as The Dervish, also known as DJ Disorientalist, has a track on the Peace Not War CD. And so he's going to be in to play maybe one tune and to give an interview. We're going to then feature some Newswire articles off the Indie Media Newswire. If you don't know what that is, you can go to www.indiemedia.org.uk and you can see the Newswire there. Or if you want to see the Sheffield page, www.indiemedia.org.uk/Sheffield, I think, off the top of my head. We were going to have the Buddhist Punk in. The Buddhist Punk is a former soldier who lives in Sheffield and does poetry and Buddhist type stuff. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it today. He sprained his ankle. So bad karma all round, Buddhist Punk, but hopefully we'll have him in next week. We will have a roundup of local events that have happened. There's been two festivals that happened in Sheffield last weekend, the Abbey Field Park Festival and the Ponderosa Festival. And then lastly, the last 10 minutes will be devoted to Christina, a local musician and artist who will be interviewed by, rather it's Ruth, a local musician and artist who will be interviewed by Christina, and she'll be finishing the show off with Dancing on the Ruins of Multinationals. But now what I'll try and do is go over to our CD and play last week's interview, or rather the second part of last week's interview with Nick and Helen.
Okay, like to talk to Nick and Helen, who were two other people who went to AVM. So, I'll ask you the same question that I asked Trolley last week. What were your motivations for going?
I mean, essentially, our disagreement that we share with lots of people around the world about the legitimacy of the G8 and their agenda, and through their unified agenda of these sort of the elite's industrial nations, the economic policy and social policies that they're trying to dictate to the rest of the world, and what that means to us as individuals in our own communities, trying to survive our lives. But also, I think always find it particularly inspiring to connect with other activists and come together on these international demonstrations for that huge sense of solidarity and that sense of, you know, working together across borders and from people around the world in sort of trying to shut down the G8. Essentially, we weren't there to protest. We were there to more than express our disagreement. We were there to shut it down. And we wanted to be part of that.
Yeah, that's an important part, the direct action against the, you know, as we say, it's an illegal gathering. And that's a very important aspect that, you know, our specific aims were to close it down rather than just protest. I think we achieved it to an extent, particularly on the first day. But on the whole, it is very inspiring to see such a large international gathering of people creating space to allow us to have a voice and a response to what we do see as a cabal of industrialised elites that are creating an agenda for them to take, particularly to take to the World Trade Order and have a unified action on their part to place their agenda on the world. So that is a large important part.
So you arrived in France. I understand that you stayed at the same village as Trollet, the Vargue village, the anti-war and anti-authoritarian village.
Yeah.
And they talked quite a lot last week about the way that the village worked in terms of democratic structures, very horizontal nature of what was going on. Did you find that as well? Was that your experience as well?
It was. It was very inspiring in the way that it was organised and how there was space to sort of explore political ideas and act them out for the first time, not often something we get to do, and explore that among ourselves. And I think it worked quite well. You could get involved to the degree that you wanted to around the sort of collective meetings and the way it was all organised around the sort of the kitchens and the meetings that we had. But also, just the amazing part as well was the infrastructure that these people had gathered together. The kitchens, the events, the sort of like mini conferences, just the actual nature of the place and what people brought to it was pretty inspiring.
Yeah, the attempt that they made to pull themselves away from any organised authoritarian dictatorial methods was one of the most inspiring parts. It was an open platform for people to voice their opinions, and I think what was particularly inspiring was the last day where the village invited the villagers to come to an open meeting and a dinner, and I think that was very inspiring because the media had hyped up, had scaremongered the locals, and they were very scared of who and what we were. Thought we were just a bunch of unorganised vagabond criminals who were going to smash everything up. And it was inspiring because the villagers came up and they were asked to speak. And before, they had quite a few of them had been to political meetings, but they were dictated to and not asked to voice their own opinions, and I think that was a very inspiring thing. And I think we can see that all around the world. It's slowly we're able to get away from being told what we are and being asked what we are. And I think that's a very inspiring part of it, and that is something that I have brought back.
Cool. Also, it provided a space for them to begin to understand us, because very often our voice and our ideas doesn't clearly reach them. And we had a general meeting where everybody could stand up and express, and they were asking them us questions about who we were, and it gave us a chance to explain what our dreams and ideas were, and just to, you know, really like hands across this huge divide. And it was such a wonderful evening, and of sort of music and food and discourse that doesn't usually take place. We're so divided by how we're represented in the media, and I think it was one of the big successes of what Vargue did, was to establish that link with the local community while we were staying there.
I think something that really knocked it on the head was an activist from Ireland at the meeting stated that he had travelled a long way to come to this demonstration, but it was nowhere near as far as the villagers had come to meet us at the camp on that day. And I think that just expressed it so beautifully, that these people really had come far to come and meet us, hopefully to destroy the myths that had been spread about us and open up a dialogue.
I'd like to talk a little bit about what actually happened to you while you were there in terms of the actions that you were specifically involved with. You mentioned that your intention was to go to Geneva. We talked with Trollid last week and they did most of their activity around the camp and also around Lausanne. Did you get to Geneva? And if so, what happened to you while you were there?
Yes, the first day of actions was on the Friday and we went to Geneva from Annemasse, which is actually a French suburb of Geneva. We had to cross the border, which we did illegally. 300 of us got on a train from Annemasse to Geneva to take part in the demonstration. We actually commandeered the train and refused to pay and crossed the border illegally without showing any identification. And before we arrived at Geneva train station, we were aware that there was a presence of riot police there waiting for us. So we actually pulled the emergency cord on the train and departed the train before it got into the station, and therefore we were able to move through Geneva without a police presence, which was particularly strange, seeing us 300 of us marching down the streets of a normal everyday Geneva suburb heading towards a demonstration. The locals seemed a bit
guided by locals.
Yeah, absolutely. We were guided by locals. I think the atmosphere was particularly interesting because we'd previously been to Genoa and the police repression from day one there was absolutely phenomenal. You were scared to go out on the streets, people were getting picked up, dragged to police stations, and so we were particularly aware of that situation. We didn't know what the police response was going to be, so that was first and foremost in our heads. But as we arrived at the demonstration, there was a loud sound system playing which seemed like Germanic rock music, which was particularly bizarre, but it was a blazing hot day and it turned out to be a fairly decent sized demonstration. And we then proceeded to commit ourselves to a tour of several institutions within Geneva that we decided we wanted to vent our fury against opposition to.
Give us an example of some of the places that you visited in Geneva.
The WTO headquarters was obviously something everybody made a beeline for and was on one of the first stops on our what turned out to be almost like a radical tourist trip of being sort of showed around the institutions, and people with the sound system gave a bit of a sort of overview of the sort of criminal activity of each institution as we passed it. But we got to the WTO, there was really no police around, and as Nick was saying, it was kind of sort of slightly disarming us because we weren't used to such a low police presence, so people weren't really sure what they could do. But eventually people started attacking the signs, there was graffiti going up everywhere, people managed to break the locks on the gates swung open, but unfortunately that revealed a line of armoured of well-armed riot police. So there was a bit of a standoff, and that was really it for the day. It was kind of like going so far in the graffiti and challenging the infrastructure around us as we could, but there was still this sort of like final line of police. So it was a bit of a strange day, really, that we were left alone, but we weren't really sure, people weren't really sure how far they could take it. But a little bit of tear gas that day, but really we were left to it. I think it was the police testing out to see how the rest of the days were going to unfold. But it was very much like a radical tourist trip. Would have suited open top buses, really.
With proper open with proper public transport that you don't have to pay for in the first place.
Right, that was an interview with Nick and Helen, who were at the Genoa and Evian actions. Paul T will spot the deliberate mistake, I think, with that interview. I'm not going to give it away. Maybe a prize for someone to phone into the studio and tell us what the deliberate mistake was with that last interview. Anyway, I'm going to hand over to Steve now, who's going to talk to Adam, Tanya and Tom about the Sheffield squatter scene. Over to you, Steve.
Okay, hi. Yeah, squatting. There's a lot of myths about squatting. One of the things is that squatting is illegal. Myths in the mainstream media sort of include things like people like squatters, people go away on holiday for 2 weeks and come back and find their houses occupied by people illegally squatting. In fact, nothing can be further from the truth. Usually most squatters find accommodation which has been empty for as long as possible, in some cases years. And we're going to talk to Adam and Tanya now, who've got a very nice house in a nice suburb of Sheffield, which has been empty for, what is it, about 16 years, is that right?
Yeah, it's been empty for about 16 years now, Steve, yes.
And how long have you lived there?
I've lived there for the last 8 years. Started off in one house and then moved to another one, which was three doors up.
And what's the legal situation with your house? I think it's quite unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, the legal situation is quite unusual. As soon as I moved in there, because I know other people have been there already, we went to see a solicitor, and the solicitor asked us about the history of the house. So I told him that the woman that owned the house had actually died. She'd owned three houses up our road. Her family, next of kin, had moved to South Africa. So what happened was the people carried on living there. The solicitors could not find anybody to take over the deeds or anybody to give the house to. So therefore, the people that were living there and carried on living there were made to be seen as keeping upkeep of the house. Therefore, there wasn't anybody to throw them out of the house because it hadn't become into disrepair. They'd kept upkeep of it and kept it in a good state of affairs. So therefore, solicitors or anybody else couldn't throw them out, or the council couldn't throw them out until the house or what the council had seen has come into disrepair.
And have you had any problems? I mean, it sounds like an ideal situation. You've got a nice house in a nice location. Are there any problems sort of that sort of are not encountered by people who are in either rented or their owned properties?
Yeah, you've got to do all your DIY yourself, obviously, working from a budget. You've got to do a lot of building work. You can get people in to do this if you'd like them to do it, but with the way we are and what kind of people we are, we always wanted to do it ourselves. We've been to see solicitors, like I said. The solicitor said it's in a, what he would call a legal black hole, he said. Like I said, nobody can throw us out of the house because we've been deemed to keep upkeep of it, and also we can't buy the house because there's nobody to buy the deeds from.
So what sort of work have you had to do on the house? You say you've been there for 8 years now. Has it cost you a lot of money to do it up, or was it okay when you moved in?
Yeah, what we decided to do when we moved in, wasn't it, Tanya, was any money that we saved on rent we decided to pump back into the house and make it nice and livable, just like a normal home.
And is this the same situation with the other two houses that are in your street then? They've got people there too?
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, exactly the same. Yeah, yeah, totally.
And how about before you've been there for 8 years. How about before that? Were there people squatting there before that too?
Yeah, there was people squatting there before that. I think it was a little bit more anarchic then because of how the squatting scene was seen and what kind of people were doing it. So when we moved in, it was like 10 deep in carpets, and you could see through the ceiling and stuff. But we managed to do that up and sort it out, right?
And what about the future? Are you planning on moving out soon, or are you quite happily staying there for a while?
Well, we're not planning to move out that soon, but the problem are the winters, to be quite honest. Basically, there's no central heating. So Adam built a wood burner, and that's sort of the heating for the house. But you end up not getting ill at all because you're just used to being fairly cold.
Okay, right, we'll go over to Tom now. Come in, Tom.
Thank you.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Tom. Now, you live out in rural Yorkshire. You live on land. You've got 3 acres of land, quite a lot of different cottages, I believe.
Yeah, 19 houses.
19 houses. And how many people you live as a kind of a community, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. There's 25 adults living there, and I think, yeah, nine children, so there's a couple of families. Basically, the place started as a it was originally squatted 5 years ago, just over 5 years ago now. The buildings were in a real state of disrepair, and people decided to move in there and slowly do them up.
And what's the situation? Have you had any problems? I mean, it sounds amazing having 19 properties out in the countryside, and who owns them? Have you had any comeback from the previous owners? Or
well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely it's a one in a million sort of chance to find somewhere like that. But as most properties that are up for squatting, it's surrounded with grey areas and some very sort of shaky issues. I myself have only lived there for a couple of years, and I'm not even sure of the whole truth, as it were, myself. But it was abandoned. The properties were abandoned in the mid to late 90s. Sorry, and it's just been took from there. There was one legal contest, but that was actually dismissed by the judge. So that's pretty much given us a green light to carry on living there. It's given us a lot more confidence about our status.
Okay, and how did you end up living there? How does, if someone wants to find somewhere like that, how did you manage to find your way there?
Well, our place is it's a group of friends, really, very close group. A lot of us came from the anti-road protest movement, so we, after living on sites, protest sites for various places and times in the 90s, we're looking for somewhere to live, and that's the place we found. So it sort of went from there, really. And since that, it's developed into a structured community, and yeah, we're living there as if it was our own property now.
And have you had to do a lot of work on the place yourself? And how much does that cost? A lot of money? How do you fund stuff like that?
Yeah, we've done loads of work on the place. I mean, as I say, they were really derelict. I mean, after being left empty for a couple of years, people have been in there and ripped out all the copper pipe, taken slates off the roof. Radiators off the wall, you name it, it'd gone. We were literally left with like some brick walls and some doorways. But yeah, we've done a lot of repair work. There's been repairs done on one of the main gable end walls. We've re-slated an entire roof. This is all bit, and we've had to reinstall electrics and plumbing. Although we've done the electrics along the lines of alternative energy. So we don't have any mains electricity. We've decided to go down. With us all coming from an environmental background, we've decided to go down the line of alternative energy. It's been a really good learning experience for everyone that lives there. We funded that through just paying a nominal ground rent to ourselves, just into a building fund of a few quid a week. And with so many people living there, that soon adds up. And we've been able to buy ourselves tools, bricks, slates, ladders. The stuff we need.
So the entire all 19 houses don't have any sort of outside electricity, is that right?
That's right, yeah. It's all done on solar power and wind power at the moment, with a hydroelectric system soon to be online.
Oh wow, that sounds very exciting. And does that work okay? You have any disadvantages? That sounds
it's enough to live on. But we have to go without a lot of luxuries. There's no, you know, we obviously have limited television hours, things like electric kettles are completely out of the question, electric heaters and stuff like that. But they're inefficient appliances to use, and there's always alternatives, so we do quite well. It's a really good way of living. You really appreciate the sort of natural resources that you have to hand.
And how about you obviously must like it there. You've been there for a few years now. What are the good points about living there? What are the bad points?
Well, the good points is, as I say before, I mean, it's given me personally a really good. I've learned a lot of skills in terms of building, electrician work, stuff like that. I feel that I can take on most DIY jobs myself now. And even if you're not sure of those sort of things, there's always someone around that does know and is happy to give you support. It's really nice to see sort of what can be done when people get together. It's not all about having loads of money and having to spend thousands of pounds to get a roof re-slated for you. You can do it yourself if you've got mates around you and everyone chips in. That's definitely one of the best things about the place. But there's always downsides to these sort of things. At the end of the day, there's a lot of people living in quite a small space. It is a busy community. and we don't always see eye to eye with each other, and making decisions about taking the place forward can be quite frustrating sometimes if, you know, people have different ideas about what they'd like to see the place developing into. But it's all about tolerance and respecting other people's opinions.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much for that, Tom. If you want to find out more about squatting, there's the Advisory Service for Squatters, nicknamed ASS. Their website is www.squat.freeserve.co.uk. Okay, over to whatever's next.
This is
Sheffield Indie Media
on Sheffield Live 106.6 FM, on the web at sheffield.indiemedia.org.uk.
And that was a special tune, a very nice tune chosen by us by our next guest, Ajaz, that's in the studio now. Hello, Ajaz.
Hi, Christina.
How's it going?
Pretty good. I had a really difficult time earlier trying to find, one tune to start this interview with, because there's so much great music of protest out there. It's just impossible to just choose one.
Yeah, I know, because we asked you to bring in a political tune, didn't we? And who was that?
The original track was from one of my favorite artists of all time, and it was sung by one of my second favorite artists of all time. It's the original track is by Bob Marley. It's called Rebel Music, and this one was a cover done by Gilberto Gil, who is probably the closest thing to Bob Marley alive today. He's now political activist based in Brazil. He's actually in the government now. He used to be very active back in the 70s, a contemporary of Bob Marley, and he had to live in exile for a long time out of Brazil because of his politics and his music.
I see. And you're, of course, a DJ, but also a politically active person, and you've been doing quite a lot of things, especially this year. Is that right?
I don't really look at myself as being active. It's all part of being, it's your politics or your values, aren't they? So I don't really separate it from the rest of my life as such, you know.
And you did a track for the Peace Not War CD compilation, if I'm correct, is that right?
Yes, I did.
And you also played out Men with Hill at the Gatecrashers ball.
Yeah, that was a fantastic day with half of the men in ball gowns. Such a contrast from the MOD police across the other side of the fence with their machine guns.
Definitely, and that was we've already covered that as well here on the radio show, and it was an amazing day out.
Yeah, I played a lot of Intifada tunes, actually, Palestinian protest music.
We have to listen to some of that maybe on the next show or something. This is all very good. I'm really personally also interested in the kind of fusion of politics and music. And your politics, I take here in a more general kind of sense, not of political parties and the government as such, but politics as in the values and the way you live your life and the kind of ideas you have about how the world should be, right? So and you like a fine example of the fusion of those two. So, I know, what is your position, kind of, what do you have to say about music and kind of politics? Do you think it's a good combination? Do you think it's...
Well, I mean, all great art actually is driven, the creativity behind all great art is actually driven by passion. And passion comes from somewhere, whether it's frustrations that people feel with being feeling hopeless in society, that you can't, your government is going off and bombing the crap out of people somewhere and you can't do anything about it, or you're living in dire poverty and everything you do, you just can't get out of that spiral of poverty. Those sorts of frustrations create passion, and that passion sometimes results in great art as well. And music, one aspect of great art is music. Some of the greatest music that has been produced, in my opinion, is music that is political, really, but it comes from, a passion that results from the frustration of, from a sense of hopelessness.
Yeah, and we went to Bradford actually for your night on Friday. I picked up a really interesting leaflet called "Make Love Music, Hate Racism," for example, from was it Anti-Fascist League, Anti-Nazi
League? Anti-Nazi League, yes.
Which had a really nice idea about how music can bring us all together.
Closer together, yes.
So, would you say you have a similar?
Well, that's always been a theme in my life, actually, because I mean, For a while, I was an illegal immigrant, one of the smelly creatures you call refugees, asylum seekers. Well, actually, I was even smellier than that. I'm an economic migrant. So, I was in Canada at the time, and and faced a lot of racism, and saw, you know, probably the nastiest sides of it. And since then, one of the main themes in my life is to actually to bring people together and try to bring some form of understanding between different peoples of different cultures. And I think music has a very important role to play over there. Just being exposed to music from a different culture and enjoying it, that in itself, even if it doesn't say anything political as by itself, the music itself, it affects people at a certain level where, you know, perhaps it's going one step in the right direction towards an understanding of somebody different, somebody from a different culture. And the nights that I do that you saw in Bradford, you probably saw there were people from every background imaginable there.
Yeah, definitely.
Arabic speaking people, Latin, Greek.
Like me.
So just seeing all these people enjoying music together, and then everyone seeing their own music mixing in with music of other people's, perhaps at some level, you know, says something to them that, you know, if the music can mix so well together, then perhaps people can as well. But you can see that on the dance floor as well, can't you?
Oh, definitely. Everyone, yeah, was just there's united,
Pangra
definitely.
Mixed with the Zorba the Greek.
Yeah, it was amazing. And music is a way of overcoming, I suppose, overcoming barriers.
Yeah, boundaries, breaking.
And breaking.
I don't believe in borders. I hate borders. And
no borders.
Immigration
no borders,
laws.
Definitely. Borders suck, man. That's terrible. Well, that's lovely. I don't know if you feel anything, any last thoughts.
Oh, lots of thoughts. I don't know.
You said you could go on for about 10 hours on this issue.
Probably,
so.
Yeah. Another tune? I don't know.
Well, maybe next time. We don't next have quiet time. Time. As always, we've got a full packed show, indie media show for you today. So I think we're going to thank Ajaz very much for coming down.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure, always. And yeah, check him out where he's playing, because he's absolutely amazing. And now we're going to go on to some Newswire features.
Thank you.
We've got Lucy to update us on some global and local news and bits that have been happening. So over to you, Lucy.
Okay, well, I'll start with the local news from the Newswire from Sheffield Indie Media. We've got the Revolution OS screening on Saturday the 26th at 4 o'clock at the Showroom Cinema. This would be interesting for anybody who's into the computer software, but trying to avoid the multinational corporations. It's a bit of an anti-Microsoft rebellion. It's a story of how some independents have created their free alternative to Windows through GUN and Linux. This is a documentary that's won some festival nominations, Savannah and Kudzu. So it's probably well worth going down to have a look and learn a little bit about how you can get into anti-establishment software. Okay. Also, we've got once again an arrest witness plea from the Independence from America Day that was mentioned earlier. It was from the first person arrested. He's described himself as a short guy in a red kufka, and he was arrested at 2:15, directly behind the Sheffield Samba Band. So anybody who was around about then, can you get in contact? There's more details on the Sheffield Newswire. Have a look for that. Okay, we've got some national news from the UK Newswire here. Yesterday there was a council walkout in Oxford where Green, Lib Dem and Independent Working Class Association councillors they walked out of their city council meeting yesterday because the Labour government decided to hold some council business to avoid debating motions that they were opposing the government's line on. So a bit of a controversial councillors' actions going on. We've also today at 6 o'clock at Piccadilly Circus there was a boycott Coca-Cola action. Anybody who's into
actions against multinational corporations. This one was to stop the policy of violent treatment that has left 8 Colombian Coca-Cola workers assassinated in the recent years. It was put on by Colombia Solidarity Campaign to try and get the wrongdoings of Coca-Cola spread out to the mass audience that they supply to. No reports back on, but keep an eye on Indie Media UK Newswire to see how that went on today. And one little global story, well, I say little, but this is quite a vast, important story for anybody who's concerned with human rights issues. Apparently, in Romania, 4.5 million people are condemned to death by the social policies of the Romanian government. They're going to apply some IMF policies, which is set to exterminate the useless and unproductive people. This is going to take out 20% of the population, mainly the elders, and these will be the generation of people that rebuilt Romania after the war. So how they're exactly concerned, seen as being useless and unproductive, I'm not entirely sure. Anybody who's got any sees this as being an atrocity, or anybody sees this as scandalous stuff, write down to the Romanian embassy, put your words down and tell them that this mass genocide is not on. Okay, that's a few little stories from the news. We're going to go back to Bill.
This is
Sheffield Indie Media
on Sheffield Live, 106.6 FM, on the web at sheffield.indiemedia.org.uk.
Right, you're back to Sheffield Indie Media show on Sheffield Live, 106.6 FM. We're trying to broadcast on the internet as well, having a few issues, I think. Perhaps the notorious and infamous Cisco router exploit problem has been causing network difficulties, as I'm sure you're all well aware of. So all I can say is, if you're trying to listen on the internet, well, one, you probably won't be able to hear me now, but if you can get a snippet, just keep persevering, because when you do get through it, it's well worth it. We're just going to have a little local roundup here of what has happened recently in Sheffield. Last weekend we had two festivals on. We're fortunate to have two festivals on. The Ponderosa Festival on Saturday and the Abbeyfield Park Festival on Sunday. So I've got Sophie in the studio here.
Hello.
Who will tell us about Ponderosa.
Well, the Ponderosa was up at Upperthorpe Park. It was really, really good, actually. We did lots of samba workshops. There was samba drumming and samba dancing. I was a dancer, which was very exciting. We got quite a few people. We tried to get the aerobics class that was going on, then joined in. There was music by the Phonetics. It's a band, and they were really wicked. We got filmed, actually. There was a guy from SIF Filming made a film. I saw a bit of it today, actually. I was on it.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Yes, very.
And is that going to be for public showing?
I hope so.
Okay, very good. That's nice.
It was perfect. Captured the event perfectly. And then the Underground Hoods. Hoods Underground.
Who are they?
As well. They're a big hip-hop band. Rappers.
Right.
Boys.
Sheffield-based, are they?
Yes. Very good. Very nice. Nice boys. They asked us to be in their music video, actually.
Right, very good. So you're getting a lot of publicity.
Of course.
And a lot of media exposure. I wasn't entirely listening to everything that you were saying, because I was messing around on the chat room.
So
if I ask any repeated questions, then forgive me, everybody, listeners included. Was there a falconry display there?
There was, yes.
Yeah, okay,
you were very well informed. I wonder where you got your facts from.
Bird told me. Off, off.
Oh, very good. Yeah, no, there was a couple of women there with some birds of prey, hawks, sparrowhawks, and owls as well. They were very pretty.
Right. What about food? I like my food. What were there any exotic type of foods available?
See, this is what was lacking at Ponderosa. It was a very poor display of food. There was only one burger van there, and it was really just bog standard burgers, hot dogs, and onions.
That's pretty poor, really, for a community event.
On the other hand, the Abbeyfield.
The Abbeyfield, which moves us swiftly, neatly into.
How I brought your internet.
That was very. That's a true professional. That's really good. Excellent. I like your style.
Oh, thanks.
So, I've got a list of questions here. So I'll just go off the top in a non-spontaneous way. When was that? Where was it? What was it?
The Abbeyfield Festival was in Abbeyfield Park in.
Where?
Burngreave.
Burngreave. Where's that? Oh, yeah, north of Sheffield, isn't it?
It's quite near here, really. No, it's not too far out of town in this big park, and the food stalls there were absolutely amazing. Food from all around the world, loads of amazing delicacies to delight your palate.
Right, yeah, I've got a list of stuff. Yeah, food from around the world. Tell me about the music that was there.
Well, apparently there was a apparently there was an amazing African band. They did some amazing drumming and just got the crowd really going. Loads of world music, just lots of just exciting little snippets of stuff from all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
A real good festival.
Yeah, I've got here that there was a South African band, mm-hmm. Yemeni, yeah. And then also local Burngreave musical artists as well. Yes. Tell me about the carnival parade.
The carnival parade, well, that paraded around the carnival. No, it paraded around the park. Got everyone into the whole different acts that were going on the stage, got everyone into the day a bit more.
There wouldn't have been stilt walkers on this carnival parade.
There were, actually.
I've been well briefed. What about kids in carnival costume?
Oh, yeah, very, very festive costumes, yes.
Excellent, excellent. The weather, I believe, sunny and
beautiful.
Warm.
Beautiful, look at my tan. I don't know if you can see it on the webcam, but yeah.
Yeah, stick it on the webcam. Very nice indeed. Yeah, I think rain was forecast, but sunny and warm, mm-hmm. sunny and warm all weekend long.
Weekend.
The Burngreave Messenger people had a stall there. The Burngreave Messenger is an independent local community newspaper for the Burngreave area, and I was told out to give them a plug. How many people would you say were there? I know the answer to this. How many people did you think were there?
How many people? I'd say 1,500.
The official toll for the Abbeyfield Multicultural Festival, this is the official toll, and this is like people walking in and out, 12,000.
Wow,
12,000.
You're
joking. So in reality...
Is there not many people in Sheffield?
Well, you know what I mean? So like, in reality, I mean, half it, 6,000 people maybe there. You know, so totally supported by the entire community.
Yeah, it was a
roaring success. I've never been to it myself. I must go next year. Right now. Okay, sounds good. Anyway, I think we'll have a... I need to bring somebody else in. I need to bring Steve in to talk about Earth First, maybe. And he's waving a piece of paper at me. The Earth First Gathering. And Steve, why don't you sit at that free microphone over there? Let's hit it.
Great, okay. Thanks, Bill. Right, okay, this is another story from the Newswire. It's a regular event, happens every year, the Earth First Summer Gathering. For people who don't know what Earth First is, it's not like an organisation that you join, it's more of a network for people who want to do similar things. What those things are, well, on their website it says, the Earth First Summer Gathering is a place where people involved in ecological direct action, or those who want to be involved, get together for 4 days to talk, share skills, learn, play, rant, find out what's going on, live outside, and strategise. It's going to be, this year, it's going to be in North Yorkshire. The exact location won't be known until about a week before, but you can find that out from the website, which is www.earthfirstgathering.org.uk, or if you don't have the internet, you can send a stamped addressed envelope to Earth First Summer Gathering, care of Cornerstone Resource Centre, 16 Shoalbrook Avenue, Chapeltown, Leeds, LS7 3HB. The cost is at least £10. They'd actually like people to pay a little bit more than that, but if you're really hard up, you can pay £10. If you're a bit better off, you can pay £12 or more. It's camping only. There's no live-in vehicles at this particular site, I'm afraid, so bring a tent. Food costs about £3 a day, unless you bring your own, which is a pretty good deal. No dogs, and that's about it. Oh, the dates are from the 13th of August, that's a Wednesday, until Sunday the 17th of August, but you can go any time within those dates that you feel like it.
Right, we've got Ruth here with us as well today, another guest. Ruth is from the Sheffield Samba Band. She's going to talk to us a little bit about samba today. Hello, Ruth.
Hi.
How's it going? You all right?
Yeah,
I'm fine.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm lovely. So you've been with the Sheffield Samba Band for quite a while now, and you're generally a dedicated sambista, from what I know. So how did you get involved?
Well, I first got involved in samba in Prague in the year 2000. There was a big demo there against the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. And they had a samba band there. That was the first time I met them. I just got into it, and it was really cool, so I carried on doing it.
Wicked. So you've been sambaing. Have you been sambaing in Holland as well? Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a sister band in Holland, which actually came from Prague as well. It was like in Prague, there was a group from London that started it, but then loads of people got involved, and people in Amsterdam decided to set up their own little band. And when I was in Amsterdam, I joined them as well. I did quite a few demos with them and used to practice with them. And when I came to Sheffield a few months ago, about 6 months ago, I heard there was a Sheffield samba band, so I went down and got into it.
Lovely. So what is it about samba that really kind of, you know, inspires you or whatever? What is it that draws you in?
Well, it's great fun to be a part of it. And it gives out a really good vibe, you know, to all the people around you. So it's like you go to a demo, which could be really boring, or really crap.
Marching and chanting.
Yeah, slogans and stuff like that. And you have a carnival, and it's really cool, and people really like it. People get really into it, and you get a real buzz off it, you know. And you feel like you're doing something, but in a really fun way. So
yeah,
cool.
That's true. And again, it's like music and carnival as protest.
Yeah. And actually, the roots of samba are quite radical. Like, it's always quite often used on the streets in Brazil and so on to, like, give people power.
Right. And it is very empowering. I mean, I've danced and played with the samba band myself, and it is amazing. It's such good fun and really empowering. Yeah, definitely. So you're also going to do a little song for us, if I'm right, yeah? And this is... it's a very special tune with which we're going to end this. We're going to end our third Indie Media Radio show. One before the last, really. It's going to be very sad to do the last one next week. But we hope you all tune in, and we hope you've enjoyed this week's show as well. 106.6 Sheffield Live and Indie Media Radio. We'll finish off with Ruth today, and thank you very much for listening. Yeah, go on, say something about this song.
Yeah, it's a little protest song, because I heard you were, like, doing stuff about protest and music.
Yeah.
And it's by an American guy called Casey Neal. Just found that out on the internet yesterday. Although I've been busking it for quite a long time. And it's quite a funny little song, so I'll just sing it now.
All right, lovely. Go for it.
Damn. Oh, hang on. This might be really, really shit. Oh, sorry. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, 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 ha. Say goodbye to plastic and goodbye to waste. No more convenience stores, hello to stars. No more Wall Street and Pentagon. Thinking about these things makes me happy. Dancing on the ruins of you distracted me then. Pause, yeah, I got cut. No, okay. Wait, I'm gonna start again. Goodbye to polystyrene and putting an end to waste. There's no time for debate now, we have to make haste. If we're going to survive without computer programmed minds, we're gonna have to can pop culture. Dancing on the ruins of multinational.
It's good, only because I'm on the radio, normally I do it really good.
I'm not.
That's really unprofessional, isn't it? I should just carry on. So, they're dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, 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 ha. And say hello to campfires and stomping bare feet and naked amoebas hungry to eat. Hello to primal consciousness, love for the last, my dog. Now that coyotes are running the country, yeah. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, 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 ha. Sayonara to suburbia and well-manicured lawns. Bye-bye to Barbie and Kendall Pond. Oh, no more developers and slime ball execs. Your condos are on fire. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, ha, no more Christian country, we'll have pagan deity. And when we destroy technology, we will all be free. The pavements will be ripped up and skyscrapers torn down. And yes, we are coming for your children. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. A multinational corporation. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, 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 ha. Sorry about that. Is it finished now?
This summer, this F. Sheffield, 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 Sheffield Live.